This is WMRA's Not Yet Named New Show. I'm Martha Woodruff.
One, two, three.
Who would ever suspect that inside the bosoms of a mild-mannered biology professor and a crisp alumni relations professional beat the hearts of beer brewers? Bill Hamilton, the professor, and Tom Lovell, the alumni relations guy, have been friends with each other since they both arrived at Washington and Lee shortly after the turn of this century. But they've been friends with beer a bit longer. Bill, I'm speaking to you. Do you remember the first beer you had?
Yes. I was on a 10-day European tour in ninth grade. And I believe it was a Heineken in Venice, Italy.
How cosmopolitan of you. And how was it?
Oh, it tasted great, of course.
Yeah.
You know, I was going into ninth grade, and that was a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Tom, do you remember your first beer?
Mine was a Schlitz Tallboy.
What's the story around this?
It's what we could get our hands on at the time.
And how old were you?
Not of age.
Not of age. Okay, well, we'll let that rest in peace. Who first had the idea for Blue Lab Brewing?
It had been a dream of mine for a while, and I think separately it had been a dream of Tom's for a while.
Wait. Why? I don't dream about brewing beer. Why were you dreaming about brewing beer?
Well, it's fun to do, making beer, home brewing, and the craft beer industry was taking off, and it seemed like a reasonable thing to get going as a business once you can work your way through a lot of the logistics.
Well, we'd been brewing together probably the last 4 years,
mm-hmm.
3 years. We had gotten together with a group for a little beer club in Lexington just to have fun and drink good beer. And from that, a smaller group bought a small system, upgraded sort of from the 5-gallon barrel to a 25-gallon system. And out of that group, Bill and I were the ones that were sort of stayed with it and continued brewing and kept thinking, one day, wouldn't it be great to be able to take this to market? And we did.
What were you looking for in terms of beer markets?
Well, it's an industry that's grown by at least 10% in the United States for the past 11 years.
10% a year?
Yes.
Wow.
And whereas domestic mass-produced beers are actually declining.
Mm-hmm.
And wine consumption is going up, and liquor is actually plateaued. People are into enjoying a beverage, a wine or a craft beer. They don't want a simple domestic beer. So it was very encouraging to think of that. And we both enjoyed high-quality beer. So to then be able to make high-quality craft beer and play around with styles, push some boundaries on some styles was another fun thing to get involved with.
So. We also wanted the opportunity to bring the craft beer to the area, to educate those that haven't been introduced to the craft beer of what it is. And, you know, as you said earlier, the wine industry has been there for a while. So we're using the opportunity to do the same thing with the beer.
Beer, Bill and Tom tell me, erupted onto the Colorado culinary scene a decade or so ago. So, what goes into making beer?
Well, it's broken into two styles. Two types of yeast are used, ale versus lager. And, of course, within each of those yeasts, there are hundreds of varieties of yeast that impart different flavors, different properties to the beer. They make it a sweeter or a drier flavor. And then you layer on top of that the different malts, the barley malt that goes in, other grains like oatmeal and rye at the brewer's discretion, and different levels of roasting bring in different flavors. So you can have a very light pilsner like a Pilsner Urquell, which is a great Czechoslovakian beer, to something like a Guinness stout, and that all comes from the malt. And then the hops. And American beers are really, that's where we've taken off with our hops and using lots of hops, making things very bitter, but then also making it very flavorful with hops and very aromatic. So you get the full taste sensation, bitter flavor, and the smell of hops. And with that palate, you can make just about anything.
What's the process of brewing? you get this, you know, I was baking some bread last night. I got out all my ingredients, dumped them together, and stuck it in the oven.
Well, we've got all our ingredients at the brewery.
All right.
And I'm going to let Bill. Bill's the brewer, so he...
You're the brewer. What, are you the business guy?
I am.
All right.
He's the pretty face.
Oh!
Quality control.
Nobody can appreciate that on air, but...
Yeah.
It starts with milling the grain so that we can expose the starch. Once you've done that, it's called the mashing process. You then extract those sugars from the grain bed with hot liquor, but it's not really liquor. It's just water that's hot. That shuts all the enzymes down so that you're not converting the starches anymore. And then you can collect that now very, very, very sweet wort, and that goes into the boil kettle.
Okay.
It gets boiled for 15 to 20, 25 minutes to break down the protein. And if anybody's ever made jelly, that protein or the scum, as we used to call it when I was growing up,
yeah.
You're doing the same thing with the wort. You don't want that protein in the beer. It makes for cloudy beer.
So you skim it just as though you
Well, we don't skim it because actually the protein we want in there because then the yeast, when it goes into the fermenter, like that protein. So there's a trade-off there. So you need a certain amount of that trub, as it's called, to go into the fermenter, but not all of it.
So are you standing there watching it as it boils? Or
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So this is where your skills as a brewer comes in.
Yeah, so you're keeping an eye on it, and in our case, it's, you know, it's close to boil over because we're at maximum capacity
mm-hmm.
with our kettles. And then once you've gotten past the hot break, as it's called, where all the protein is essentially coagulated and is in solution and no longer foaming over the edge, you can then add hops. And the first hop addition is for bitterness. So the back of the tongue feeling that you get when you taste something really bitter.
Mm-hmm.
And they boil for up to 45 minutes to an hour. And then different timings of hop additions will bring in and different styles of hops. There are just as many hops out there as there are yeast varieties. So depending on the style of hops, when they're added, you can get different bitterness, different flavor. And then at the end of the boil, just as you turn off the burner, you add hops that will just give aromatic properties because much of taste is also smell. So that beer then gets chilled and put into a fermenter. We choose the yeast that we want to use for that style of beer, add the yeast, and ferment it away for a predetermined amount of time or when the beer decides it's done.
Which is, give me a ballpark.
Anywhere from 10 days to 21 days.
Okay.
Lagers take longer than ales. Certain ale yeasts are much more rapidly ferment away sugars than others. The higher the gravity, we measure the sugar content in gravity or bricks. Are the units, and the more sugar there is, the longer it takes to ferment.
So how did Bill Hamilton and Tom Lovell come up with the name Blue Lab Brewing Company?
That took a while. That was probably the longest, other than finding a venue, the name took us the longest. And
what were you looking for?
Well, I think originally what we were looking for is nothing having to do with dogs and nothing having to do... specifically geographically centered.
Uh-huh.
And we kind of ended up with both. The lab has a double meaning. Lab is a laboratory with Bill being a biologist. And then we both had Labrador retrievers for the longest time. Bill's was Sam, after Sam Adams.
Yeah.
And mine was Guinness. And... just when we think of labs, you think of good-natured, fun, friendly, happy dogs. So we tried to work that element into it. And the blue comes from the Blue Ridge Mountains. I think it's safe to say we're both W&L connected, and blue is one of the main colors for Washington and Lee. And we just thought it sounded well, so we put it sounded good. So we so we put it together.
Do you market it through grocery stores at all?
No, right now it's everything is out of our door front.
Brew on premises.
Okay. Brew it there. You can come in and sample what we have on tap. And we have an ABC off license, so it's not a bar. You would come in and buy a growler and fill it with your style and take it home and enjoy it. And then the growler is yours. The bottle is yours, so you bring it back and just refill it.
Now, is this a prowler?
Growler.
Growler. Growler.
Growler.
Okay. Is that what Yes. This is that I'm holding. This is a wonderful bottle. It's deep. I mean, can you describe it? Paint a picture of it on the radio.
It's 64 ounces, which is 2 liters, a dark amber color to protect it from the sunlight. It's a jug. It's basically a glass jug.
With your logo on it.
Correct.
What's the history behind this thing?
There's a couple stories that have gone around, and people might debate it, but the one I prefer and that I've gotten the most consistent feedback on is that it was when shift workers were, they would, at the end of the shift, they'd be given their portion of beer, and if they didn't get it in time, and it would come in a bucket, and they would growl if they didn't get their beer. The alternative story that then also comes up is that kids used to bring home buckets of beer from bars. You know, after school, they'd bring home a bucket of beer from the local tavern. And as it got sloshed around, it would make a growling noise. Both of them are interesting stories, but that's the, and it I believe from everything that I've heard, it's an American concept that now most of the bottles are actually made in Europe. But the concept was started here in the United States.
Is there anything that's been more fun than you thought it would be?
I don't think it's more fun, but seeing the reaction of folks coming in, trying new beers, new styles, is pretty gratifying.
Converting a diehard stout drinker into somebody that would drink a wheat beer because they'd never had a wheat beer like that before. I mean, that's fun. I guess that was an unexpected. Because people come in and they say, I only drink stout, or I don't drink stout, and now they're buying our stout half the time. I mean, that's a satisfying, fun piece of what we've done.
Reason to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah, we didn't expect to convert people to beer, drinking craft beer, but we've even done that, and that's been a lot of fun and satisfying.
I think we've had some fun with the name and sort of exploiting the Blue Lab. We mentioned it earlier. When we opened, we didn't have a grand opening. We had a grand unleashing. And instead of cutting the ribbon, we cut a leash.
That a dog was attached to.
And and every beer that we tap, we unleash it. So folks know when it comes, when we have a new beer on tap, it's unleashed. So that's been kind of fun to play around with.
Bill Hamilton and Tom Lovell, your owners, operators, chefs of Blue Lab Brewing in Lexington. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to know more about Lexington's Blue Lab Brewing, you'll find a link to Bill Hamilton and Tom Lovell's microbrewery on our website, WMRA.org. For now, we'll leave you with perhaps America's most famous beer drinker, Homer Simpson.
Well, beer, we've had some great times. When I was 17, I drank some very good beer. I drank some very good beer I purchased with a fake ID. My name was Brian McGee. I stayed up listening to Queen when I was 17.